Thank you, Xavier, and thank you so much for inviting me. I regard it as a real honor. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about Gillian, which is a multi-language platform for compositional symbolic testing and verification. And today I'll spend more time on verification, which is based on separation logic, and we'll apply the ideas to JavaScript code and C code. My co-authors are Petter, Jose, and Sasha. And unlike me, these three are fluent in French. So we have a very European group, and especially there's a lot of French being spoken. Petter did a PhD at INRIA Sofia Antipolis and then a postdoc with Alan Schmidt at INRIA Rennes. He did the JS CERT project. There's Jose, who did a PhD at INRIA Sofia Antipolis, and Sasha, who was at Paris Saclay before coming to Imperial. Petter and Sasha are on the chat, so if anyone wants to ask questions on the chat, feel free and ask them in French or English, whatever makes sense. It's better to ask the questions than to hesitate. So I've done a lot of work on separation logic verification. It started in 2005, actually, so a long time ago. But the work I'm talking about today started in a journey I did on thinking about JavaScript. So here I was working with a tiny fragment language and basically concentrating on the memory model of JavaScript. As Xavier said, I was part of a big team working on JS CERT, which was a combination of people at Imperial and people at INRIA. And then this lot is about verification of JavaScript. So here, for the first time, I was working with real language rather than various fragments of a language. And so at that point in our head, we had the idea of going big and working with JavaScript. Then I here did verification, again, thinking about real world code rather than the small stuff that was going on here. And just recently, we've moved our ideas not from the specific language JavaScript, but instead building a tool for many languages. But all the ideas here feed into here, and the jump to here is really about being parametric with respect to the languages. My talk is solely on what's going on here. So Julian provides unified symbolic analysis of different types of analysis. And in particular, we've done whole program symbolic testing, which is based on a core execution engine. Just think about an operational semantics, really, where inside the code, you've embedded first order assertions about symbolic inputs and outputs. And so you've got the code, you're annotating with first order assertions, and you're either finding mistakes and giving counter models, or you're able to correct up to a bound because the loops are unrolled. This is where I will spend most of my time today. And basically the big step is, what do we do to specify functions and then use these specifications to verify code? And the way we do that, we're thinking very much in the world of separation logic, providing functional correctness guarantees or failed symbolic traces. And then last, there's bioabduction, which we also do, but we haven't explored this one so much for now. And basically the idea for, whereas with the, as you know, with full verification, we've got the code and the annotations are really quite meaty. When you get to bioabduction, the annotations are extremely lightweight. you're doing less complex things, but you can either do bounded correctness results or give lightweight information about what the bug was. And this approach has been made famous by the Facebook guys working on the info tool, which is based on separation. So now let's get started. So I've got some quite technical work to tell you, but I've also got some quite high level work to tell you. So please be happy that you just listen to this talk. I'm doing this in sections, and if you don't quite understand one section because you're not a theorist, then you might understand the next section because you're a practitioner, or vice versa. So don't worry if this is too much. I'm trying to give you an overview of all that's happening. So for the Gillian platform, we've got the Gillian infrastructure that does a very normal thing, which is work with an intermediate language, in our case, a go-to language. That's normal. It's parametric on the memory model of the target language, and that is not normal. So with this parametric place is quite unusual. We're working with a first order solver that we've developed, very much powered by the Z3 theorem prover. We don't regard ourselves as experts on this. We've done a lot of work on the first order solver, but the link to the Z3 theorem prover, there's absolute specialists doing this sort of thing, and we're not them. But the other thing we are quite novel in is that we've got modular analysis, starting with the execution engine, building up the verification and doing bioabduction. And the way we instantiate Gillian is as follows. We need to put in the memory model to the basic GIL intermediate representation, and we compile from the target language to GIL. We've got two sorts of memory models. We've got a concrete memory model that's useful for testing and useful to get us started. And then we work with a symbolic memory model that sometimes is just a lifting, but sometimes is actually of the concrete memory model, but sometimes is actually quite meaty to do with pointer considerations, so that the world here is different from the world here. We also have trusted compilers from the target language to GIL. This very much has the emphasis that the compiler is preserving the memory model and preserving the semantics. So there's nothing fancy about this compiler. It's doing Oracle-like stuff. We know that the control flow of a language is going to be able to be represented in a go-to language. So there's nothing very interesting there. And we're preserving the memory model because we're doing separation logic. We want to work with the memory model. And whatever we do at the intermediate representation, we want to be able to lift up to the target language. We have example instantiations of while, which is my laboratory. It's for teaching and experimenting. And sometimes it's even interesting just to think about why. But also, we've done real-world languages of JavaScript and C. So for JavaScript, we need the extensible object memory model and a JavaScript compiler to GIL, which we developed as part of our previous work. And for C, we need a block offset memory model, and we use the CompCert compiler that, of course, you know. So when I'm talking about memory, I'm thinking about CompCert. And we are also just starting with Rust, because my PhD student, Sasha, says he wants to be more modern and work with Rust rather than with C. One important thing is we're really wanting to integrate the theory and practice. So there's a lot of work on tools based on separation logic, some even getting into industry. And there they have the pressure of doing things absolutely. They've got their deadlines to make. They have got to be useful to the general developer right now. Whereas we're from an academic group, so we're allowed to go slower and really understand what's going on. Not to say that the others don't understand, but to really think about the underlying theory and what does it mean to bring the theory into the tools. And that's always been very important to me and was my reaction to this swell of people interested in industrial verification. I wanted to go slower and think about the theory. So our core execution engine has a formal semantics that I'm not expecting you to read. For people who know about formal semantics for go-to languages, this is very straightforward. And the user has to input basic actions. Now, a basic action is something, for example, if you have a heap, you have a little cell in the heap, and the basic actions will read and write to that for that basic cell. So it's the tiny little manipulations that one has for the memory. And we have a parametric rule that allows us to bring these actions into the formal semantics. Again, don't have to read it. On top of this, we then go on to what we need for the verification. And in particular, we have to understand abstractions given by used to build specifications. And here we're linking the symbolic memory that we work with in the execution engine to the separation logic assertions that you know and are familiar with. And in particular, we have something called core predicates. So just like you have a little heap cell where you can read and write, so you have a core predicate, which is just a heap assertion in separation logic. It's the tiny heap assertion. And because we're relating to what's going on in the symbolic world, we have consumer and producer actions for each core predicate. So these give the read and writes associated with the basic cells. On top of this, we're building abstractions given by user-defined predicates. These user-defined predicates might be for the tool developer. For example, we have a predicate to handle the prototype chains of JavaScript, or they might be predicates to do with the programmer who's got their own data structure that they're willing to manipulate and needing predicates associated with that data structure. So we have folding and unfolding rules for the user-defined predicates. And in fact, folding sometimes needs manual help to unfold. Unfolding needs the manual help, but the folding doesn't. The folding can be done automatically. We also have function call to relate what's going on with the specification of functions. And I just want to explain that in a tiny bit more detail. So we have the notion of specification reuse. So we have function specifications looking like this. You will be familiar with this. This is just a separation logic for triple with a precondition P and a postcondition Q. And the goal is, given the symbolic state we're in, the current state of the main program, we're now calling this function, and we want to use this specification associated with the function. And what we do is we unify part of the state that corresponds to the precondition and consume it, leaving the frame. So actually, I've forgotten to pull. Sorry, Petra, but we have a frame here, and we've got this precondition P that's actually theta P. So this theta P does the binding, and we match between this and this, giving bindings to the logical variables. And we take this out, leaving the frame. This is what it means to consume. Another word is inhale that sometimes gets used. And then we have the post condition that gets put in by this theta Q, also called exhale. And so this gives the producers and the consumers, using the learned bindings, produce the resource corresponds to the post condition. And finally, the last bit of the analysis is by abduction, and it gives a fundamental connection with the symbolic execution engine via these things called fixes. So in separation logic, you know you've got partial information about memory rather than the whole memory. In an operational semantics, you have a whole memory. But with separation logic, you're working with bits of memory. And so you might have missing information about the resource you need. You might be reading a cell, but you don't have the cell in the bit of memory that you're working with. You can fix it by putting the resource back that you need due to reading a particular cell, for example. So we've connected up the errors given by the execution engine to the fixes that you need to do bioabductive execution. And this is given by another additional rule on top of the basic form of semantics. With this, we've got parametric correctness results. So for execution, the verification given by these specifications and by abduction. So that what you need to do is give little lemmas for the correctness of the symbolic actions with respect to the concrete actions, and then you can lift it to this general correctness result. So you only need to talk about the basic actions, the core predicates, and the fixes, and the rest comes for free. So what we've done, and in our published paper, we've done forward soundness, forwards completeness. In a paper we're writing at the moment, we've also got backwards completeness for symbolic execution. And we've got bounded correctness guarantees. We've got full verification guarantees. And we've got bioabduction, where there's no false positives, meaning you don't make mistakes. And in the sense that the fixes are not over-approximating and no over-approximating specifications are used. And you've got bounded verification guarantees if the fixes are not under-approximation. I think if you do, this is getting quite technical now, and I'm not giving you enough details to fully grab this. You'll have to look at the papers. But that gives a whirlwind tour of what does it mean to do the theory of Gillian. And that's not needed for the rest of the talk, which is on instantiations and then the practice of doing verification for real world code. So first we go to instantiations of JavaScript and C. So what we need to do is work with compositional memory models. Normally people work with the whole memory for operational semantics. Here, we're working with the compositional memory models because we're in the intuition of this separation logic place. And there's something sort of fundamental about this compositional way of thinking about it, where you only have these partial memories, which is that we must work and understand basic actions that must account for positive information. You really know about this heap cell. Negative information, you know that this heap cell is not there. And missing information, where you don't know anything because the heap cell might just not be there because you're in this partial place and needs to be added or is in the frame or something like that. So we need to give compositional memory models for JavaScript and for C, which it's not there before. And in particular, so we need to give partial extensible object memory models with explicit absence of the object properties. You can delete properties. And you need to give partial block offset memory models and explicit tracking of the freed locations and block bounds. And one thing I am quite surprised about in this world of separation logic, there's not been much work that's been thinking in this way. So there's a couple of us thinking about it right now. So first JavaScript. If people know my work already or others' work, I'm doing it in a slightly different way. And the reason why is I'm trying to make the real connections between JavaScript memory and C memory. So in the JavaScript memory, we're going to have a location. And at this location, we have three bits of information. We know about the property table. So given a location and a property, do you know its value? Sometimes the value is not there, because if you've just deleted the property, then you know full well that the property is not there and you've got no information. So this is negative information about the property not being there, represented by this empty set symbol. We have a domain table that I'll explain in the moment that talks about infinite resource. And we have a meta table that a data table that I'm not going to talk about. The symbolic memory is just the symbolic lifting of the concrete memory. You can pattern match and see that it's the same. Instead of working with location strings and values, we're working with symbolic expressions, but we still have the information about things not being there and things being missing. Excuse me, I sort of said here, with the domain table, it could be that the domain table is missing. That bottom notation means just that the domain table is missing. If I have a function, for example, I have a function specification where I don't actually know what's going on with the domain table, because that's in the main memory, the main code. And we have well-formedness conditions that just says separation makes sense and there's a connection between the domain table and the property table. So in the case of symbolic well-formedness, you've got these symbolic inputs and outputs, you're building up first order constraints, so constraints in first order logic given by this pi information. And so given this information about the constraints of the variables, then you know that the symbolic locations, and the symbolic properties are separate from each other. And you also know that the domain of the property table is contained in the set of the domain table. Now, what we were actually quite surprised about, as soon as you start thinking about it, it's obvious, but until you think about it, it's not obvious. Even though you've got an absolutely huge JavaScript language, the memory model is small. So with the huge JavaScript language, we have an assignment statement. That assignment statement calls lots of internal functions. And actually there's 100 of the pathways through the JavaScript standard to say what the meaning of the assignment is. That's absolutely huge. But the memory model is small. And in particular, there's only 6 basic actions for the management of the property table, the domain table, and the meta table. I mean, think, read, write, and then you're nearly there. It's really, really small. And in order to express it, we need 3 core predicates. We need to know that given symbolic locations, for example, in the symbolic world, we need symbolic locations, symbolic properties, goes to a value, or not, because it's not there. And we have the domain table and metadata. And we have exact fixes for all these exact actions. Exact fixes means you've got nice correctness properties. We have explicit negative information. So here we've got the negative information that the property is not there. And also the domain table is giving negative information. And this is what I wanted to explain. This D is a set of properties, and it's the idea that these the set of properties associated with L, and if a property is not in that set, then the property is not there. So properties are just strings. There's huge numbers of strings that are not in the memory. And so this is describing negative information about a property not being there, done as a little assertion, a little core predicate. And together with these core predicates, we have the basic actions and how they work. So I'm just going to talk about the basic action for get property. So this is just reading the value, it couldn't be simpler. And I'm going to talk about it in the symbolic execution case. So first of all, we ask, given the symbolic memory here, we ask if the location is in the memory. If it's not, we have a missing object. That's an error. Or it is in memory and it's one of these three things. So now the property may or may not be in the domain of this property table. If it's in the domain, great, we can get its value. If it's not in the domain, then we ask whether or not we have the domain table. This domain table might be missing. If it is missing, then absolutely you give an error. If it's not missing, and this is quite subtle, if it's not missing, then you've got information. And in particular, you know whether or not the property is in this domain table. If it is in, it means that the property is missing because you've got no information in the actual underlying heap here, but it's in the domain table. Or it's not in the domain table. And why is it not in the domain table? It's not in the domain table because it really is not there. So this is symbolic execution for this action, get property. And we can make fixes. We can do bioproductive execution where all these errors, which are resource errors, can now be fixed. There's a bit of the subtlety with the fixing because you need to fix in two ways, because either the information really does have a value. So in particular, the property at this location really does have a value, or it's not there. So the fixes can be quite subtle. Now I'm going to go to C. And purposely, I'm writing this in a way that resonates with what I've just done. So we've got a location as before, and now we're working with blocks. So we either have a block or we don't have a block. If we don't have a block, it's because the information is not there. Why is the information not there? It's not there because it's been freed. Or we've got the information about the block, given by the block contents. And so we have a block context and a block bound. But maybe the block bound is missing and is not there. So we also have the possibility that this is the case. Why? Because again, in the function specification, you might just not know what the current block bound is associated in the main memory. I've done that again, the main program. Here, I've just lifted the symbolic memory as before, but actually what happens with Sasha's work is that we, instead of working with this memory, we work with balanced trees. For anyone who knows Robert Crever's work, we're in that space. And the reason why is for performance. And I'm not saying our performance is killer great, we might even be able to do better, but we're where we are for performance reasons. And again, we have well-formedness, the separation of now the symbolic locations and the offsets, and also the connection between the block bound and the block contents. If you have a bound, then you want the contents to be within the bound. You want the offsets to be within the bound. See, memory is complex, but actually the basic actions are small as before. And they deal with the blocks, the bounds, and the freed objects. And we have this sort of information that says, really, you do have, given this offset at this location, you do have this symbolic value. Or you have a bound, or you have a block that with no, you have a block location with no information. The block has gone, it's not there because it's been freed. And we have exact fixes for all actions. So let me enter, I think I've done enough. We get explicit negative information. The bound here is saying any offset at n or above the symbolic natural numbers is not there. And we've got symbolic execution for the action, in this case called get fill. Either the location is in the memory. If it's not, it's a missing block. If it's there in the memory, but actually it's it has the location has this missing information not there, then the reason why is because of use after free. Otherwise, it is there. And either it is there, and not only that, the offsets in the domain of this block and you get the value, or it's not there. And if it's not there, the information, the bound information might be missing. If it's missing, then you have a missing cell. If it's not missing, you've got information about the bound. So you've got this offset that either is less than n, in which case you've got missing information, or it's greater than or equal to n, and in which case you've got buffer overflow. This information here and here is about resource. You can fix it. This information is about errors in the language. You can't fix it. So the bi-abduction fixes the bits you can bit and leaves as error the bits you can't. So I'm really pleased with this story. We've actually really integrated how one thinks about C and JavaScript memory. And with that, I would like you to show you how we use Gillian in practice. Again, absolutely take a breath. If you haven't got the stuff before, you've probably got a bit of the intuition, and now you can work forwards from where we are now. This is a bit of a breath. Now I'm going really quite technical, and it's quite syntactic because code isn't syntactic. I've done work on symbolic testing. We're not going to talk about that today. I just want to introduce Gabby, who's another in my group who's working with JavaScript events. I haven't seen her for the last 6 months, never mind that we haven't seen anybody, but she's actually done internships at Amazon and Facebook over the last 6 months, and I'm having my first meeting with her this week. Now, I want to focus on full verification, and in particular, I'm going to look at Amazon code, AWS code to be more precise, to do with message header manipulation, to do with encryption SDK. And what they have is code written in JavaScript and C for the same data structure. And so we're going to look at this code. And the current approach to verification for JavaScript is concrete testing or runtime correctness assertions. So here we have this information here called needs. And basically it's saying information about something not being negative and with a particular buffer bound. So we're going to be able to work with that in our separation logic reasoning. But here, this is something a developer writes, and at runtime it's checked. With the C code, You've got similar sorts of things going on. Here's the C code. Similar sorts of things going on, but also CBMC has been right the way through this code we're working on. And so we've got the sort of bounded model checking assertions, the first order logic assertions. And so now we're working with different assertions because we're doing a combination of first order logic and separation logic. So our first project is small. It's enough. It's just the verification of the message header deserialization module. We've got 200 lines of code for JavaScript, 950 lines of code for C. And there's an awful lot of features used with this code. So we're doing a lot here. And basically, we have verified that the code really does correctly deserialize a well-formed header, returns false in the JavaScript sense or an error in the C sense if you have an incomplete error, and throws an appropriate error if supplied a malformed header. So also to do this, we had to fix some bugs. We actually improved the implementation of JavaScript. We had a great developer working with us, and they were absolutely lovely, always answering our questions. And he changed his code because when you do verification, the structure of the code must fit the data structure. And if you try to do two tricksy things that goes against the data structure, well, of course you might be wrong, but even if you're right, you're actually, going against the data structure that isn't so readable. In the JavaScript world, this is the first time we've done real-world code. We were so surprised that how much work we had to do from the jump to real-world code. And so 200 lines of code, one bug, one vulnerability. 950 lines of C code that's already been checked by CBMC. We actually found one over allocation of one undefined blood behavior in the library they were using. And absolutely significantly, we had to improve Virgilian so much to get anywhere near this world. And it wasn't this amount of months, it was way more months, but it wasn't full time. So we're doing a guesstimate of what full time, very focused months might be. And look how big the annotations are. We're doing full verification here. You will have been doing some verification for tiny little algorithms in your separation logic course that Xavier's done. Absolutely, the annotations are huge. These ones are language independent about the underlying data structure. The underlying data structure has just changed slightly, but it was being static for years and years in Java, in AWS. So actually, I think it's okay to do that language independent specification of the data structure. Then there's this annotation for the C and JavaScript code, and we need to understand more about how much we actually need and how much really we don't need. We are trying very hard to do a lot of automatic verification using tactics with only as much manual verification as we can. But those invariants of while loops don't go away. They are hard and we have to deal with them. Here we have the AWS message header. It's a sequence of bytes divided into sections. And what we're going to do, we're going to reason about this data structure using first order logic. We're going to connect it to their representations in JavaScript memory and C memory using separation logic. We're going to prove lots and lots of lemmas, and then we're going to specify and verify the functions. And I'm going to focus on this bit because this is a dynamically changing list of bytes, meaning that it's of dynamic length. Given by what the content is, and it's the source of the JavaScript bugs. So we have this encryption context that's representing key value pairs, and it's representing it as a list of bytes. So the serialized list of key value pairs is given by this list of bytes. and cut up in this way. Here we've got a key represented by an arbitrary length given by the first two bytes here. We also have a value given by the first two bytes here. So we have what we call fields. These fields represent the contents of, it's representing the key or representing the value, with the first two bytes giving the length of the key. We have two field elements. An element basically is representing a key value pair. And we have lots of them, in fact, kc of them, given by the number represented by the two bytes at the beginning. So in total, we have kc two field elements. That is the structure. Now we start at the beginning. We're building up fields, elements, then the buffer. And I haven't got time to go through this in too much detail, but I can do a bit. So we have a buffer and we have a position of the field. Here's the position. It must be greater than zero. This bit here is a sublist of this part here, and given by this argument, and it gives the byte information corresponding, that gives the length of this content. So this is given in bytes, you translate it to, you convert it to integers. So now this thing is integers, and we've got this content field starting at this position and for this length. This content and this position and this length is in the buffer here. So this information is first order formula for describing this field. There's nothing interesting here. It's just detail that we have to go through. We then have a complete element. A complete element in our example consists of two fields, because we got the keys and the values. In general, it can be arbitrary number of fields. So we have a position of this element. Here's the position, it's in the we have a position of this element, and excuse me, then we're going to deal with the complete element, and we're doing it by looking at inductively at the base case and the inductive case. The base case is there's no more fields to read. The position still makes sense. You're still within the buffer, but you haven't got any field count left. You're down to zero. You've got no element and the length is zero. But in the inductive case, you've got a field. So you have this, the F count is greater than zero. You have a field, as I gave before on the previous slide. And this field connects to the rest of the list as follows. You've got the position, you've got the length here, and now you're on the rest of the element fields given by inductively by this complete element. This element is this list of fields, and the length makes sense. This is just describing this two element field or arbitrary, it's a two field element or arbitrary field. And you can use this to build a list of elements. So it's a list of the key value pairs. Sorry, I've got to say, so things are much more complicated. You've got incomplete the possibility of incomplete elements and broken elements. So our general element abstraction deals with all this, and there's a lot of work to do. So we have lists of elements. I'm not going to go through this, but I think you can imagine how it works. It's just what you know from how to work with lists in first order logic. And then you've got the actual encryption context. And the actual encryption context, you've got a list of key value pairs, and you've got the starting information telling you how many pairs are in the list. So either you're in the empty case, or you're in the case where you've got this information that gives the number of two field elements you have. These two field elements are given by the list of looking like this, and the lengths make sense. So this is how you represent this encryption context in first order logic. Analogously, you've got incomplete and broken encryption contexts, and you have a general abstraction dealing with all cases, and it's complex. But this is the language independent bit dealing with that message header, in particular the encryption context. Now we've got the language dependent bit for JavaScript and for C. So here in red, this is done in first order logic. The stuff in blue is done in separation logic. And we have an array buffer in JavaScript. Now, one could be very, these are complex structures. We actually lift up the abstraction and just think of this as a list. And rather than coping with array buffers in JavaScript, we could cope with array buffers in JavaScript, it's just a matter of manpower. So we have an array buffer, which is a list of bytes, and this bit is corresponding to this bit, the encryption context. And given this list of bytes corresponding to the array buffer, we have the view of it as uint8 array, given by this JavaScript object here and its associated functions, meaning we're thinking about this array buffer starting here and ending here in chunks of bytes. That's enough. So this structure of both the data structure in first order logic and the JavaScript structure in describing JavaScript memory, this is the JavaScript serialized encryption context. And we can deserialize it to an extensible object where this side you've got keys, this side you've got values, where the keys and values are strings given by a conversion using this function here, which is something in AWS. And we've just specified this function axiomatically. It takes key value pairs thought of as bytes to key value pairs thought of as strings. And then we have to represent what's this frozen object. This frozen object describes these key value strings, key value pairs given as strings, and it's frozen, meaning once you've got it, it's you can't extend it. But in the middle, you can extend it. These keys are unique. And yes, I've said this must be frozen. So this function deserializes the encryption context in JavaScript. It goes from here to here. We can specify it and verify it. So verify the specification. So we have this bit, which combines the JavaScript bit represented in the data structure represented in JavaScript memory and the data structure thought of as first order logic. And afterwards you have the same thing, but you also have created this extensible object. The world of C is very similar. Here we've got the first order representation of the execution context. Here, this execution context is now represented by a C array. This is much more complex. You've got C arrays absolutely embedded in the language. You can't think of it as an abstraction, just as a list. You've got to work much more closely with the language. And in particular, this took us a long time. It's C arrays with symbolic bounds. So these can vary. and someone's really, really got to pay attention to what's going on. And in particular, I'll talk about this later, just a second. So we've got this bit, which is here, and we've got an empty hash table. We do the function, and afterwards, we've got the appropriate hash table with the appropriate key value strings, and we got this lot. Now, this lot is this array here, which is here. We've got the encryption context, which is the red here. And we've got this bit here, which I'm going to talk about on the next slide. But I wanted to show you, we need it. Basically, we've opened things up. We can't work with this. We've opened up this to its contents. And the reason for that is because this bit here is saying where the array is, and giving a bit of information about the start of the array and the length of the array, given here. But whereas at the beginning, you've got the pointer to the beginning of the array, given the AWS C code, what happens is at the end, this pointer is here. And we're at the empty array, this empty array here. So given the C code that we had, we have to open this up and show that manipulation that's happened. So you still have the array, but now this bit is pointing to the empty array. Now I want to explain this bit slightly more. And this is a little bit in honor of Xavier, which is we have C structures. And this C structures is giving information about where you find this array. And it's written in C. And what CompSat does is lose this structure information when it goes to C sharp minor. So what we do is we're working basically with the memory model of C sharp minor, but we're wanting to retain this information about the C structures. And so what we do is we have this information here that is basically saying this information, and it's doing it by automatically generating this predicate. And so what's going on? You're working at the level of C, you're understanding enough of CompSat to understand how to hook it all together at the C sharp minor place or the Jill intermediate representation. So we've actually had to get into the innards of the CompSat compiler, which I think Sasha loved and hated, because there's a lot of engineering to do and he knows much more than me about it. We've got some caveats. You know, there's lots of things we can't do. So the original code was done in TypeScript, and now and we had to lose that information. I've just noticed the time. I'm not going to do much about the caveats. So I'm just going to say the we had to move from TypeScript to ES5 strict, which is what we're working on. We had to work with lots of library functions. Most are axiomized, some verified, some executed. We don't work with higher order functions, so we either had to axiomize the behavior we needed, or we had to specialize them. We have the verification, and this bit, I only want to say that it's hard. So it requires complex, automatic, and manual reasoning. So for example, take the main loop of the function in JavaScript that we've been talking about, the deserialization function. We had to use 4 tactics and 27 invariant components. Here's a tactic, here's an invariant. This is hard work. To reestablish the loop invariant, we had these tactics. It's hard. I'm not going to run the verification, I'll do it at the end. We're just discovered bugs. I really like this bug. It's a, if the key coincides with prototype object, an exception is thrown erroneously. This bug is predicted in our theory, and now we're finding it in practice. We got a real vulnerability here. We found a couple of things in the C library. Now, this is my last slide, Savia. Just to conclude, the AWS code was absolutely difficult to verify. There's no doubt about it, and we're quite proud that we managed. I've spent most of my time talking about this. We're always having to improve things. We very much want to work with Rust. Xavier talked about JS cert at the beginning. We've got WASM cert now. And so, you know, we're wondering about how to hook that WASM cert project to what's going on here. We don't know. We'd love to do COTFET certification of what's going on in Gillian, especially as everything's so grounded in theory, we don't see where we can't. My other work is very much to do with concurrency. I understand you've been told a little bit about Iris. So the Iris work uses a lot of work that's come from concurrency. So the concurrency work that I've done. And we're also thinking about incorrectness separation logic, which is the new thing that's coming up from last year. Thank you very much for listening to my talk. Just to, if you don't mind me saying this, Xavier, we are always looking for PhD students and postdocs. In particular, we would love to do this COP certification. We would love to do concurrency. We've got Andreas Lurs coming from Chalmers KKML land. He's starting September, October. We would love to have more people. We are a very small group, and there are things we can't do without more manpower.